The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Welcome to Thought Crime Radio. This is Janelle, and I'm in the studios in downtown Columbia, Missouri, coming to you from KOPN 89.5. Thank you for joining me on this holiday, Memorial Day holiday, where we do honor those of our family and friends and community people who have served and died for us. And I know here at KOPN, a lot of us are not for war. We work hard on creating a peaceful community, but today is the day where I think it's really appropriate to acknowledge that we do have our free speech radio, in part because of those that have fought for us. And the song that I played is a song by Sergeant Rick Allred, and he was the winner of a contest a few years ago with We Support You America. And I want to mention today, on this day in particular, a couple of hours ago, I was standing in line honoring a fallen soldier here in Columbia. And his name is Jason Fingar, and he's being laid to rest as we speak. And I just want to send love and peace to his family at this time, and all the families who are going through the similar situation. And I'm very, very excited today to have Dr. Bruce Lipton with me. He is a cellular biologist, and I've known about his work for about 10 years. He's internationally known right now. His book came out a few years ago. It's called The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles. And if you are a regular listener to Thought Crime Radio, you'll... I'm sorry, someone in the studio is distracting me. If you're a regular listener, you know that we talk a lot about the impact of the early period of life, and we've been trying to make connections about how the primal period of life contributes to our lifelong journey. And it seems really appropriate today to have Dr. Lipton on Memorial Day and to have a war song on, because what we're going to talk about is the consciousness of the soul of the human being coming in, and we're going to talk about conscious conception. And if you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk a lot about creating healthy, harmonious, happy human beings is going to happen when we start becoming aware and conscious of bringing in people, bringing in souls, bringing in babies that are loved and wanted. And I think that's how we can change the world. And I know that Dr. Lipton probably has a lot of people that follow him listening right now. But for those of you who are local or who haven't heard about Dr. Lipton, I can't believe that you haven't. But I want to read his bio to you. He's an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit. He has been a guest speaker on hundreds of TV and radio shows, as well as keynote presenter for national and international conferences. Dr. Lipton began his scientific career as a cellular biologist. He received his PhD degree from the University of Virginia at Charlottesville before joining the Department of Anatomy at the University of Wisconsin's School of Medicine in 1973. Dr. Lipton's research on muscular dystrophy, studies employing cloned human stem cells, focused upon the molecular mechanisms controlling cell behavior. An experimental tissue transplantation technique developed by Dr. Lipton and colleague Dr. Ed Schultz and published in the journal Science was subsequently employed as a novel form of human genetic engineering. In 1982, Dr. Lipton began examining the principles of quantum physics and how they might be integrated into his understanding of the cell's information processing systems. He produced breakthrough studies on cell membrane, which revealed that the outer layer of the cell was an organic homologue of a computer chip, the cell's equivalent of a brain. His research at Stanford University's School of Medicine between 1987 and 1992 revealed the environment operating through the membrane controlled the behavior and physiology of the cell, turning genes on and off. His discoveries, which ran counter to the established scientific view that life is controlled by the genes, presaged one of today's most important fields of study, the science of epigenetics. Two major scientific publications derived from these studies defined the molecular pathways connecting the mind and the body. Many subsequent papers by other researchers have since validated his concepts and ideas. Dr. Lipton's novel scientific approach transformed his personal life as well. He deepened understanding of cell biology, highlighted the mechanisms by which the mind controls body functions, and implied the existence of an immortal spirit. He applied this science to his personal biology and discovered that his physical well-being improved and the quality and character of his daily life was greatly enhanced. Dr. Lipton has taken his award-winning medical school lectures to the public and is currently a sought-after keynote speaker and workshop presenter. He lectures to conventional and complementary medical professionals and lay audiences about leading-edge science and how it dovetails with mind-body medicine and spiritual principles. He has been heartened by anecdotal reports from hundreds of former audience members who have improved their spiritual, physical, and mental well-being by applying the principles he discusses in his lectures. He is regarded as one of the leading voices of the new biology. Dr. Lipton's work summarizing his findings, entitled The Biology of Belief, and his new book, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and A Way to Get There from Here, is available now. So I'm very, very excited to introduce Dr. Bruce Lipton. And are you there?
Yes, I am, Janelle. I'm so sorry that things that ran so long. We won't have enough time to talk.
Well, I wanted everybody here to know who you are, and like I said, I can't believe that people don't. And you've been in several movies. I just got a new film today about the universal visions of a universal humanity, and I see you're in that film as well.
Well, that will surprise me because I don't know what that one is, but I'm having a good time with it, and I really thank you for this opportunity because this is a very critical time in human evolution, and we're going through an evolutionary upheaval right now, and that's why all the crises seem to be showing up at once. And the significance is that they're really not independent crises. They're all interconnected, and they really reveal that the way we have been living life on this planet has been not only self-destructive to humanity, but we are destroying the environment, which provides for humanity. So it says the way we've been thinking, the way we've been behaving, is antagonistic to having a good life. And now we're finding some very scientific understandings about how our beliefs control our lives and how the fundamental beliefs that we have been living by are now found to be scientifically flawed, saying then the beliefs that we've been living by are actually not guiding us on a proper path. They're actually taking us to what is now recognized by science as the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. We're literally creating our own extinction out of our belief systems. And a lot of that belief systems, as you mentioned in the little or the long story getting into this, is a lot of these beliefs are acquired through our development. And these beliefs now have been identified by molecular mechanisms, how a belief is translated into genetic activity and controls gene activity and also our behavior, so that we become shaped by our beliefs. It's interesting. It's a relatively new in regard to understanding the nature of the science of it, but what is interesting is this reality of how you put beliefs into a human and program them has been understood since ancient Egypt. And in fact, the Jesuits for 1500 years have been saying, give me a child until it's six or seven and it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. Or they would say, you give me a child and I will show you the man. what they knew was, if I have the first 6 years of programming, I can control the rest of your life. And so it's a this is an old known reality, but now science is revealing not only just the words of that, but there's a molecular basis that even controls our genetics, so that our beliefs even control our biology, and then the biology in turn generates the behavior. So we are actually not victims of genes, as we've been led to believe. That's the old belief, that genes control lives. And the new science is called epigenetics, and epi is a prefix that means above. So when you say epigenetic control, that which is the new science, that literally says control above the genes. And this control now is recognized that the environment can adjust the readout of our genes. And it's so amazing, because we used to think, well, your gene is your gene, that's the blueprint. And now we recognize, and this is an astonishing thought, you have to just, you know, I'll try to say, we got to think about this, that each gene is like a blueprint to make a protein, which is a building block of the body. And the proteins, the building blocks, give us our characteristics. So the genes are the blueprints for the body's proteins, which provide the characteristics. So genes provide our characteristics. It turns out that we think that a gene just made a protein, period. Now we recognize, through this thing called epigenetics, that through an environmental interaction, you can vary the readout of a gene. To this extent, this is the mind-boggling part. By the way you interact with the environment, you can modify a gene to create over 30,000 different variations of proteins from the same blueprint.
30,000?
30,000. Wow. That means for every gene in your body, you can make 30,000 different variations on it. And that means you can alter yourself and morph yourself and change yourself by the way you interact with the environment, your perceptions, your beliefs about life. As you change your beliefs, you change your biology. I mean, it's also interesting because, while we've known about this a long time, we haven't really emphasized the profound importance of it. It was something called the placebo effect. And the placebo effect is if you believe this pill is going to heal you, and you take it and it heals you, and then later you find out it was just a sugar pill. And this is a so well established that, in fact, one-third of all medical healing, one-third of all medical healing, which includes drugs or surgery or any of the other treatments, one-third of all healings are directly related to the placebo effect, not the treatment. And you have to stop and say, well, what does that mean? It says, people thought themselves well. People, with their beliefs, changed their genetic activity. And so it's like, yeah, we've known that, but now we have the science of it, and it proves something very important. It says, A, we got programmed as we were coming into this world, and B, when we understand the mechanism of how it works, we can rewrite the programs, which, unfortunately, when we look at the way children have been raised in Western civilization for the last number of hundred years, you'll find out that the programs that we have received are mostly self-sabotaging, disempowering, and limiting to some degree, most of them. And that has weakened us, because our belief systems are turned into our genetics, which then turns into our lives, so that these beliefs have led to the issues and troubles that face us today. The beliefs that we have living by, as I started off with a long time ago, are the beliefs that are leading to the extinction that science now recognizes as a reality, that we are indeed facing our extinction. It was estimated, for example, that the fish that feed us from the ocean, they'll be fished out in about 35 years. I mean, the whole thought of living on a globe where the fish aren't in the ocean is like, what? And that's just one of the hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of things that we're altering in the environment that will not, that will lead to not sustaining us. So it says, wow, that programming that we got has been very detrimental, and yet what we know is we can rewrite the programming. And that's where our evolution is going to come from, when we become aware of the new science of epigenetics and perception, and how we interact with the world changes the genetic readout. That becomes self-empowering, because it says, well, you can change your perceptions, And it's like, well, if your perceptions control your life, then if you change your perceptions, you get a different life. And the answer is, yeah. And so we're on the verge of acquiring a new science that will help us see the perceptions of a future that actually is much more holistic and healthy and harmonious. But it will begin with changing the belief systems. Wow, I kept going on that one, Janelle.
No, that's great, because it's all the information that people need to hear right up front, and I think that it's probably new information for a lot of people that are listening in the local area and even beyond, to the idea of my beliefs and my perceptions affect my genes. When we've been, I mean, ever since I've known your work, and you know, now I read things in big research articles in online or in magazines that this is, you know, this has to do with your genetics. And I mean, we hear this all the time. We still hear this all the time, that we're stuck with our genes.
It's an unfortunate situation, because now that we see how the world is falling apart and the crises that are happening, especially in the area of healthcare, we start to recognize that many of these crises are motivated by self-interest groups that are making money. And so I have to just stand right up right here and tell you that the biggest problem in healthcare is the pharmaceutical industry. Because the pharmaceutical industry is a corporation which, by definition, the first mission of a corporation, the top level mission of any corporation, by definition, is to turn a profit for the shareholders. Then the other missions are below that, or whatever the thing is the corporation is going to do. Well, the significance about this is the new biology reveals that we don't need these drugs that are being plied out. That if we really got back the power of understanding of our programming, how to rewrite our genetics, that we can create health through our mind and our belief systems. So, you know, it's like, it's not a new idea. Christian Science, of course, has been doing this for the longest of time. There's just a reality of people knowing that this is the way healing occurs. There was a lot of healing on this planet for 100,000 years before medical schools. So the idea is it's coming back into vogue with a scientific background that says the concept of beliefs and shamanism and all that, which is beliefs, are the mechanisms that program us, and when we know the process of how we got programmed and how we can change the programs, then we become free and able to really put a much greater hold on our destiny than the way we see life now.
And you scientists have really been working to actually to show us how this is happening, how what's been happening for a long time actually happens, which is very exciting. And I learned about your work for the audience, and maybe for you. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, but I learned about your work from Deanna Elliott in her infant massage training. And I don't know if this is your language or hers, but speaking of the programming and the imprinting, we talked about conception and creating the first imprint of perception. I don't know if that's your phrase or if that was hers.
Mm-hmm.
But it for me, this was like 1999. And
it's exciting.
It blew the top off of my life.
Well, it's exciting because when we talked about that, that was like I was out there and a lot of scientists were looking at me as Mr. Total Weirdo Guy. And yet now it's come to the forefront in the public. In fact, the cover story in a January issue of Time magazine this January, the whole cover story was about the new understanding of DNA is not your destiny, that the new understanding of epigenetics. So what I've been talking about is now coming out, and it's all, you know, it's really interesting because the nature of parenting, as the stuff that you were talking about, the nature of parenting begins before conception. Because what is happening before conception is of fundamental importance to the genetics of a child that is conceived. And so in other words, the genes in the sperm and in the egg are there's a word called imprinted, which I can describe in a minute, are imprinted, which certain genes are imprinted, meaning selected before the cells mature, just before the egg ovulates. Certain genes are selected. Just before the sperm is maturing, certain genes are selected so that when those sperm and those egg come together, there's already a pre-selection of genes. And what's unique about it is that the imprinting is related to what's going on in the world at the time of the imprinting.
And that's the bigger world, and that's the person's world.
What the person is observing in the world that they live in. See, and that's what becomes important, because it's like, if the person sees the world as a totally stressful place, then what that means in programming, see, biology is so intelligent. It doesn't make offspring by chance, like, hey, what do you think? Try these genes, what do you think? You know, it's like, no, biology survives because of intelligence to adapt to an environment. And that's why it's so important. So, for example, you get five genetically identical seeds, put them in five flower pots that have different environments, different watering, different composition environments, whatever. When the seeds grow in that one generation, when they create seeds for the next generation, their genes are pre-selected in a certain way to give them an advantage in the environment that they grow up in the same environment. So in other words, genetically identical seeds, after one generation in different environments, the seeds are now very different.
Mm-hmm.
Because the plant will adapt the genetics of the seeds to fit the environment. Well, this is exactly the same for a child. When parents are going to have a child, it's a very big investment for biology to raise a child. It's not like, okay, you make some eggs and sperm, you throw them in the water and you run away, you know. It's like, so nature, every time you put an investment in, nature has lots of checks and safeguards, because nature isn't frivolous. So it says, if I'm going to give rise to offspring, whether it's plants or people, then I'm going to try to get my offspring to complement the environment so that it fits best that it can to enhance the survival. It's just so simple. Of course, logically, if I'm growing up, let's say, a plant, I'm growing a plant in a dry, arid environment, I better have a plant that can sustain no water for a period of time versus a plant that's growing up in a very wet environment. Different genes are going to be read, yet the same plant, depending on the environment, will select the genes for the environment, because nature is going to try to ensure that the next generation is going to adapt and survive. So it applies to humans. And what does that mean? It says, well, it means that the perception of the parents a time before conception is they have an understanding of the world, whether, you know, it basically goes between a range of fear and love. If you want to characterize everything in regard to human behavior and biology, fear to love, you adjust your biology to fear differently than if you adjust your biology to love. So for example, if the parents perceive that the environment is threatening, then it will select certain genes to be played when this fetus comes together, when the sperm comes together with the egg. Then these genes are going to more or less pre-shape the baby as a better fit to the environment to enhance its survival. So it says, wait a minute. Then how you see the world before the germ cells mature, just before the sperm matures, or just before the egg ovulates, it's how you perceive the world is going to select certain genes, and that's called imprinting. You say, well, how does imprinting work? And I say, well, consider the genes like radio stations, right? And you get, let's say, a new car radio or a radio where you can set the stations. And I say, you get the car radio, when you get it, none of the stations are selected. Let's say you get six buttons. Well, let's say I could program three buttons. And so therefore, when I turn on a radio, I already have three stations selected before I even started. Well, consider this like with 23,000 genes, where you can turn them on and off or select them to be activated, because these genes will lead to protein structures that will enhance the survival of this offspring. So if I perceive the world as threatening, I will select different genes in my offspring. Then if I see the world as supportive and loving, because there's two different biologies. If the world is threatening, you want to make a street fighter. You want a kid that when he's born, he's going to get out there, he's going to fight, because he's going to, according to the world, perceive if that's a threatening world, then the next generation better have kids that can fight. Otherwise, that lineage is going to end. And if the world is not threatening, the genetic readout changes, and in fact you become more brainy. That's the trade-off. You get more brainy or more street fighting. Those are the two extremes and everything in between. And because we get more intelligence and more growth and harmony, because when an organism feels safe and secure in the environment, we get to elaborate on these other aspects of humanity, consciousness, and all that. We can develop that. But if a child has to get out there and fight for its survival, then it needs to be able to be muscular and quick reflexes and all that. They use different genes. So those are the two extremes, for example. And the issue is, then parents, let's say then the sperm genes or the egg genes are like that radio where you get to select a bunch of buttons and set the stations. So you select them based on your perception. So when the egg and sperm come together, you've already made a pre-selection of traits that will enhance the child in that particular environment. That's called imprinting.
That's pretty amazing. That's really amazing. And so you gave us the number 30,000 possibilities.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like each gene then can be varied 30,000 different ways. And that's why, for example...
Oh, each gene can be varied 30,000 ways?
Each gene!
Holy!
So now stop and listen to the magnitude of what I just said. And it goes like this. If I come with a healthy gene, I can create 30,000 variations of it. Some of the variations may make a better product out of the gene, and some of them can actually lead to defective products. Because out of those variations, some of them could work really good, and some of those variations could actually destroy the function. And that's why, for example, when we look at cancer, it's less than 10% heredity where you got cancer because the parents had genes that would, enhance the potential for cancer. 90% of the cancer people didn't have that in the lineage. They get the cancer as a result of changing the reading of their genes in response to their environment so that their perceptions lead to actually genes with different activities that such as cancer. So if you like an anger perception of the world as threatening and anger and all that builds up, that changes the genetic readout of genes. Let me emphasize this to the listeners. It's like our gene readouts change as we change our perceptions. That is the basis of what we call the placebo effect. That's the basis of what we call spontaneous remission, where a person is on their deathbed and terminally ill, and all of a sudden, let's say the doctor says you got 30 days left to live, go home, take care of your details, and the person goes home, and then 30 days comes, and 60, and 120, and then 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and it's like, well, what happened? They were dead, and now they're out there. And the thing was, every one of those spontaneous remissions, at least as recorded so far, the ones that have been attributed to a change of perception about life. So the person's got this life which is filled with stresses and anger and just all the problems of not being loved or whatever, and all these stresses cause this illness. Then they face this death, and then the doctor says, you got 30 days left. And at some point it dawns on them and it says, well, if I only got 30 days left, damn, I'm going to go out and have some fun, and I'm going to let go of all these problems because I don't have any time. I'm going to take my money and go on a trip, and I'm going to do all the things I wanted to do and let go of all the work issues and the world issues and family issues and just go out and enjoy life. And in that process, they change their perception, and life becomes this beautiful thing all of a sudden. And as it became beautiful, so did their genes, because your genes become a complement of your perceptions. It changes. As soon as you change your mind, you change your biology. And they look at twins. This is a great story with twins. You can do a genetic readout of identical twins. At the moment they're born, their genes are reading pretty much exactly the same way. But then if you look at them 1 year, 5 years, 10, 20, 30 years down the road as they get older, and then look at and compare their genetic readouts, they become greatly varied, because the gene readouts based are altered by the way they live their life. And so as they have different experiences in life, they change the readout. And the readouts are not permanently fixed. That's the beautiful part. They're changed by when you change your perception. And so this also is very critical, because it says, so maybe you started off one way and you were leading off the trail and you got some bad activity going on. You ended up creating disease. And the reality is, yes, but in just the same way you created the disease with these perceptions, by changing these the perceptions and rewriting the programs, then you can change the readout of the genes and bring them back. You can make 30,000 variations. You can certainly make good and bad variations based on your life choices. And yet, why is this important? I'm not telling anybody what to do for their choices. I'm just saying your choices are adjusting your genetics, and this becomes critical. And then you go, okay, wait a minute. This all sounds like that woo-woo stuff, you know, like if I have some good positive thinking, man, I'm going to get well, I'm going to get all my genes cooking, and everything's going to be great. And then I go, okay, now here comes the secret. And this is the secret for all of us, because this is the secret that says, how come my life, if my positive thinking, if my thinking is creating my life, and I'm trying to keep all these positive thoughts, how come my life doesn't match my thinking? If you're telling me that's how it works, and now I'm going to give you why. And it's very important, because it says the mind is where the perceptions come from. You, in your mind, you create the perception. So the body picks up the stimulus from the environment, your eyes, your ears, nose, taste, touch, pain, pressure, receptors, emotion receptors, all these receptors that read the body are responding to the environment. But then the interpretation is really made in the mind. So, like, is this beautiful, this picture? Well, for one person, it would say yes. For the other, it would say no. They're both looking at exactly the same thing, so the same information is coming in, but the interpretation is different. So, basically, it says then that we adjust our genes with these interpretations, but the mind is the one that creates it. Now, here's the catch that I'm finally getting to, and the catch is this. There are two parts to the mind. There's the part we call the conscious mind. That's the part associated with your personal identity, your source, your spirit, whatever you want to say. That's you. That's your personal part. And the other part of the brain, which is actually almost the entire brain, because the conscious part was added on in evolution just behind your forehead, the whole part of the mass of the brain is essentially the subconscious. Now, here's what the differences are, and this is critical. The conscious mind is primarily the creative mind, and the subconscious mind, although it has some creativity, is mostly, primarily, the habit mind. It has programs in it. You push the button, it plays the program. You learn something from an experience. You don't have to relearn it every day. It's a tape. It knows how to do it now, and so that becomes habits. And then I go, okay, now here comes the catch. The conscious mind is the creative mind. When I ask you what you want, or when you are thinking about what you want, that's an act of creation, isn't it? I mean, you're creating something because you're talking about what I want in the future, so you make an imagination of what you want in the future. Well, that's a creation. Well, that's the function of the conscious mind. Yeah, it does that. It can create what you want. And it can also go back in the past and review the old stories and the old programs. And the conscious mind can stop and think about problems and solving problems. And I go, wow, this, you know, those are a lot of activities. And then I say, what about the subconscious mind? Oh, that's primarily habits. You learn something, how to get dressed, that's a habit. Driving the car, that's a habit. Walking, you had to learn walking. Once you learned it, that's a habit. Meaning, it doesn't take any thinking, it's just automatic, and it just plays back exactly the way the program went in. So I say, okay, here's the issue. The mind is the interface between the environment and controls the expression of the genes. The mind does the interpretation. The mind has the conscious part that can create an image of being healthy, being happy, being in love, having a great job, all these kinds of different creations. That's what that mind does. And the other mind is just playing habits. And here's the story. We only operate our lives about 5% of the time with our conscious minds. 95% of our lives, our cognitive activity, comes from the subconscious programs. Meaning, the life that you have that you want, the positive thinkings, the creative things of, oh, the great relationship, the great health, the great job, that is conscious mind creativity, and that operates 5% of the time. And yet your life is 95% controlled by the habits. And then I say, oh, wait a second, forgot
the
to tell you this.
Programming. That's the programming.
That's the programming. And you get the programming, the fundamental programming came from other people. And it's a very simple reason, like this. I say, Janelle, I buy you an iPod, and you take it out of the box, and you push play. Nothing happens. You push play. You just took it out of the box, and nothing happens. Oh, you have to put some programs in it before you can make a playlist. So the playlist or the play button is like consciousness, and the hard drive inside the iPod is the subconscious. So when you put programs into it, then you can select from the programs and the awareness that you acquired. Okay, so why is this important? Well, say a child is just born, and it was able to speak. And I would say to the child, just born, I would just say, tell me something. And this child would look at me like totally confused, going, look, and would say, I don't know anything, I just got here. It can't think of anything. It can't describe anything. It doesn't have any awareness of anything. It just got here. It's just this big light show. You know, look at all these things. I don't know what's going on.
Well, on the other hand, they are telling us with their body, which is what I believe is the subconscious, where the subconscious is, when they're telling people, leave me alone.
The body is very intelligent. The body knows when it needs to eat. The body knows when it feels safe. The body knows when it's threatened. And it will make the responses, and that's really critical to be able to read that. But the consciousness of it in the sense of consciousness is creativity. You know, like create something. It's like, well, you can't create something if you don't have any data. So basically, the brain of a child for the first 6 years, and especially in fetal development, is in a state not of the activity of like the conscious level that we're at. It's in a lower EEG electrical activity state, a state called theta in brain studies. It's called theta. That's a like a hypnagogic trance. So for the first 6 years, the child's brain's not actually even being conscious, meaning creative at that sense. It is downloading experiences and manipulating the experiences out of the experience, but it's not creative. It can play back an experience. Like learning how to walk, it can learn how to walk, and then it can walk. It learned that, okay. But it can't create things yet. And so for the first 6 years, you put in the data, like taking the music and put it into the iPod. Those are the music programs. You put it in for 6 years, and about six, the EEG activity of a child ramps up to alpha, which is called calm consciousness. That's when the child starts to use reasoning powers. That's when it can look at the data and consider the relationships of things. But why is that important? And what's important was the child wasn't conscious until six. So the first 6 years was download programs. That's what I said about the Jesuits, is they say, give us a child until it's six, it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. And you say, what does that mean? It means this. Your first 6 years are programmable, and the rest of your life, you run 95% of your life from those programs. Because that's the subconscious. And so that 5% that you want to be creative is really nice, but as the Jesuit said, you give it the first 6 years, whatever that program is, it will become your life. And the answer is yeah, because 95% of your life is programmed by those subconscious beliefs. And then, yet here's where we go wrong ourselves personally. The term is subconscious behaviors. And I say, yeah, that means below consciousness. That means when you do these behaviors, you do them without paying attention to them. You don't have to. They run automatically. And that's why the surprise, sometimes we observe ourselves all of a sudden in the middle of a behavior that surprises us. You know, it's like, oh, we caught a window of that invisible. It's like when I give a lecture, I tell the audience, I say, look, I'm sure you could go back in your past. And you had a friend that you were very, very close with. You knew your friend so intimately. He was very close. You knew your friend's behavior very well. And you happen to know your friend's parent. And at one point, you may have casually suggested something like, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill, because he's going to be the guy that's venting, like, how can you compare me to my dad? And everyone laughs, because almost everyone has had that experience. And I go, well, there's two profound points about that. Number one, everyone can see that Bill behaves like his dad. It's only Bill who doesn't see it. So basically, what does it mean? He got the behaviors from downloading during the first 6 years by observing his dad while he was in the hypnotic trance. He acquired those behaviors. And when he is engaging those behaviors, it's because he's playing it from the subconscious, which means he wasn't paying attention. So basically, 95% of our lives come from the fundamental programs that we got from other people. And then you wonder why. Well, why isn't my life turned out the way I want it? Well, because your life, the one you want, the creative one, operates 5% of the time. The life you live, primarily programmed from the first 6 years of your experience, and you yourself don't see it when it plays. And as a result, you have to recognize this. When you go out in the world with great intentions, that's conscious creativity, and they don't show up, we have a tendency to say, that's my fate in life, or that's just the way the cards fell, and I can't help it, it's out of my control. And we say that because it didn't work the way we wanted it. And the truth is, in almost every case, if you could have a video of yourself, you would have seen that 95% of the time you were probably playing behaviors that you got from other people in the first 6 years that wouldn't allow you to get to that end. And that's really where the whole problem comes down to. We are actually shooting ourselves in the foot because we don't see the unconscious behaviors, and the unconscious behaviors were programmed by other people. So they, of course, don't necessarily support where we want to go. In fact, as psychologists, they're quite aware that during the first 6 years of programming, we are consistently programmed with beliefs that are disempowering or limiting or self-sabotaging. Beliefs that the parents say to a child in the first 6 years, like, well, you don't deserve that, or who do you think you are, or you're not lovable, or you're a sickly child. When a child's under six, man, that's a recording into the subconscious. And then 95% of that child's life, until they change that recording, those recordings become the behavior that's the invisible behavior. The subconscious is not a mind that lives in the past or the future. The subconscious is always in the present. So if you were 6 years old and you heard you do not deserve it, and you go to the subconscious database and you push the button today, it doesn't say when you were 6 years old you heard this. You push the button today, it still says exactly what you heard when you were 6 years old. And so the subconscious is always in the present tense. You were told you do not deserve when you were four or five, and on a repeated basis, so that it was a repetition, then basically at this age, if I push the button about deservability on your life, I push the button, the recording would say, you do not deserve. It didn't say, you did not deserve when you were four. It says, you do not deserve now, whatever now is. So I said a lot of stuff to now, but if I could summarize it.
Well, I was actually going to ask you if we could take a break. We have about 7 minutes, and I need...
I'm sorry. You know, I got carried away because I want everybody to hear this.
I do,
because
too.
Because it's so freedom-creating.
I do, too. And then, you know, at some point, we can have you back to really talk about more even detailed stuff. But I need to do a couple of announcements.
I am so sorry for talking.
Oh, no. I this is great. I think I'm sure people are overwhelmed, but that's good. We can give them your website, and they can check out your books. It's brucelipton.com. Right?
Absolutely. It's very simple.
And I do want to let people here locally know that get your gardening questions answered by a Heart of Missouri Master Gardener. More information with Boone County University of Missouri Extension Center at 445-9792 or boonemg@missouri.edu. And did you know that African Americans have the lowest rate of drug abuse among all races, yet suffer the highest number of deaths from drug abuse? If you or someone you love is struggling with an addiction, you can make the call that saves a life. The Columbia Community Counseling Center has more information at 660-263-0680. And I wanted to get those out so that we could sort of go to the end of the hour, and I might have to just turn the music on and say goodbye when the next show comes in. The tech guys are up in 10 minutes at 6 o'clock. So much information. There were several things. This whole programming of the baby, you know, as a cranial sacral therapist, I've come to see that the subconscious is the body, and mm-hmm. and emotions are in the body. The visceral organs are really, when we're talking about our emotions, we say, she broke my heart, he pissed me off, it made me sick to my stomach. When people are in a true emotion, and then you ask them to talk about that, then they go into the neocortex part of their head. And I think that sometimes the head and talk is like a pressure cooker. So I think if we could go out with maybe talking about some of the information that you have about how people can begin to rewrite, because I think that, I mean, I know that yoga that is showing that we can re-imprint our brain, the cranial sacral, there's all kind of the psyche K that you're aware of, or associated with. So if we could go out with you giving people some information and hope about what they can do about that.
Yes, I would love to. In fact, before I even go there, let me just say my website, BruceLipton.com, has a file you can select there called Resources. So if I don't get to say all of them, there's a list of a whole variety of different ways to go back and change the program. I mean, this would be a very sad phone call if I wasn't able to tell you, surely you can reprogram your belief system and in the process change your genetics and your behavior by affecting these subconscious programs. And the issue is, well, how do you get a change in subconscious? I think the first thing is to recognize what you can't do, because that's been the cause of the greatest frustration. The fact is this. The conscious mind learns, it's a creative mind. It can learn by listening to a lecture, reading a book, or solving an understanding by, you know, creativity. So it's a creative mind in that way. The subconscious mind learns basically by habit or by direct hypnosis programming. So now I say, well, why is that relevant? And the answer is this. Because the conscious mind and the subconscious mind are very different. The conscious mind has an identity, a source or a spirit. You're in there. And the subconscious mind is like a machine. It's more like what we used to use, a tape player. It's like a record tape player that records programs. And why is that relevant? Because we have a tendency to try to get upset with ourselves because we want to correct ourselves by talking to ourselves. And then the humor that I find in that is that, who are you talking to? And the answer is, well, I'm trying to talk to my subconscious. I said, well, that's like talking to the tape player. So I go, well, how effective is that? So you put a tape in the tape player, you push play, you don't like the program, and then what do you want to do? You want to talk to it to make it change the program. And I say, well, there's the problem. It doesn't change that way. So you can talk to your blue in the face. The program's going to stay the same. You can push the record button, but I'm going to talk about that in a second. The other thing is this, is that we also read a lot, like self-help books. And the problem with that is that at the end of the self-help book, if I gave you a test on the information in the book, you could get 100. But the information that you just learned was learned with the conscious mind, but it wasn't learned with the habit mind. The habit mind's got repetitive programs, things like you had to repeat them to learn them over and over again, like your alphabet when you're a child. You repeated and repeated and repeated until you got them down. If I just read the words of the book, my conscious mind could become aware of the meaning of, these self-help things that I need to do, but the subconscious mind didn't learn that way. So that's the disconnect. So the issue is, it's not so much the learning of the conscious mind, which is needed first, because that's the awareness that you say, oh, this is what I want, that then allows you to say what you want to put into the subconscious mind as a program. But to get to the subconscious mind, you have to get to it in certain different ways. You can't talk to it. You can't read a book to it. So basically, how do you get to it? And the answer, well, one of the first ways is very simply this, is hypnosis. Because how did you get the programming in the first place? Because your brain was in the EEG state called theta, which is a hypnotic trance. So hypnosis, clinical hypnosis, is an interesting way to get there. Oh, but here's a do-it-yourself hypnosis. because the brain waves, the theta waves, are between the sleeping waves, which are delta, lower activity, and the more advanced active conscious waves, which are alpha and beta. These are high activities. Theta is between sleeping and consciousness. So if you're going to sleep, there's a period where as you're going out of consciousness and the brain waves start to slow down, you enter into the stage of theta before you go fully out. Well, why is that important? Well, theta is a hypnagogic trance. So if you were playing tapes, like subliminal tapes, as you go to bed, then as you're going to sleep, as your mind is just passing into the theta part, it will take the information in the tape and put it down into the program. So, you know, it's like a very easy way to do it, but it's repetition. It's repetition. That's how you have to do it. So it's not playing the tape once. As I said, the subconscious mind is repetition.
So you're almost unhypnotizing.
Absolutely. You're just actually rehypnotizing with a new program, overriding the old program, just like you can do on a computer. And then lastly, there's a whole group of new psychology modalities that are collectively called energy psychology. And what's really amazing about energy psychology is that it sort of gives you the access to the record button on that tape player. And it gets you into a state of like super learning so that beliefs can be changed in matters of minutes. And that's the most exciting thing. And it opens up the right and left brain, probably. This is the most likely understanding, creating a harmony between the two hemispheres, which we don't have in our normal waking life. And during that harmony of the two hemispheres, the brain is like in super learning, where it can download information very quickly. So it's so important for us right now because we're facing very critical times, and it's necessary for us to go faster. And so it's really wonderful that this new energy psychology, there's a whole variety of modalities, have been developed to facilitate a more rapid download of these programs. And then also what's interesting about energy psychology is that you don't need to go backwards into your life to find out what the problems were that led to where you are, for a simple reason. Your life, remember, is run by the subconscious 95% of the time. The subconscious is always in the present tense, meaning whatever your life is creating, it's almost inevitably a direct readout of the subconscious programs, meaning the things that work well in your life, you've got programs in the subconscious that encourage them to be there. But the things that you struggle with in your life, that generally reflects at that moment that you have programs in the subconscious that do not support your end, whatever you're looking for. So basically, you don't have to go backwards in your life. You can just say, what is it that I'm trying to get? What am I working on that's not succeeding? And that's when you can identify what issues are specifically the program issues you need to deal with. And this really facilitates why energy psychology is so effective, because you don't have to waste time going backwards. You can just get to the point, identify what the beliefs are that are limiting, and then through some particular kind of exercise or protocol that each one has slightly different, but they all essentially work the same, through some protocol, you can engage a super learning moment where you can take a new belief and rewrite the old one with a new one. And this is really exciting. So it's very quick and rapid, and we really need that kind of stuff right now.
And I hear the music starting. Thank you so much, Dr. Bruce Lipton from brucelipton.com, for joining us. And the name of your book is The Biology of Belief. And what's the new one?
Spontaneous Evolution, something we're going through right now, so it's very exciting.
And we'll have this podcast up on the thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com soon. And thank you again for joining us, and I'm going to go out today with a song by a local woman, Lucy Myers, and it's another song about a soldier in honor of Memorial Day today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.